Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. So today, I'm really, really excited about our guest. Our guest is Doug Kirkpatrick, and he is an organizational change consultant, TEDx and keynote speaker, executive coach, author, and educator. He is also a regular contributor to the Huffington Post blog on great work cultures and author of Beyond Empowerment, The Age of the Self-Managed Organization. As a partner in New Focus Strategic Group, an international consulting firm, he leads organizational transformation and education initiatives around the world. In 2017, he signed a publishing agreement with Forbes Books to author a new book on the future of work. Welcome, Doug.
Thanks, Claudette. Great to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. It was so great to hear you speak at the conference we both attended, The Wisdom of Modern Workplaces, back in the summer or in the fall. And ever since then, I've been really looking forward to sharing with listeners this whole your book and this great concept and idea of self-managed organizations, which I think is so important. And I feel like a lot of people don't know enough about it. Has that been your sense?
I agree that not enough people know about it, particularly leaders of organizations. I also find that people are learning more and more about it every month and every year. And the term self-management is becoming fairly well-recognized in management circles, so it is becoming more popularized.
Yeah, and isn't that's a great thing. So speaking of that, when you talk about self-management, what are you really talking about? What's the concept behind it?
Well, the idea of self-management is the absence of command authority and the management of oneself in the context of an organizational environment, as opposed to management of other people. And so self-management really recognizes the reality that each one of us is already a manager in our own personal lives. So we have no boss tells us who to date, who to marry, where to go to college, what to do for a living, whether to buy a car or a house or have children. Somehow we figure this stuff out on our own without a boss. And these are life-altering decisions, big decisions. Mm-hmm. So the theory of self-management in organizations is that to the degree people know what to do and how to do it in the workplace, why do they need a human boss looking over their shoulder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that just turns, when you talk about it that way, the way that you just did, it just turns our whole concept of a manager on its head. That's what was going through my mind, right? I decided who to marry and I didn't need anybody, you know, giving me feedback on it, right?
Exactly.
I just went ahead and, right. So why do you think some organizations, because we know things are changing a lot, are still so wedded to this idea of a manager and that a manager is necessary?
Well, it's partly tradition. So management is how everything gets done in the world. It's planning, organizing, controlling, selecting, and coordinating. Those functions apply to every project, every enterprise that's ever existed, from the pyramids to the Great Wall of China and everything since. So management is essential. That's how work gets done in the world. But those functions can be and are upheld by each and every person, as I mentioned, their own personal lives. And it's possible for those functions to be carried out by individuals in the workplace without having overseers that essentially direct them and control them and tell them what to do. So it is possible to distribute those functions, and those functions are not rocket science. Obviously, one can develop commercial expertise in management to one degree or another, but those functions can be carried out by individuals throughout an organization, which lowers the cost of bureaucracy, makes decision-making more efficient, and creates a leaner and stronger enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you have a really interesting history you shared when I heard you speak about how you got involved with self-management. Do you mind sharing that with us? Because it was such a great story.
Yeah, sure. So I got out of college and was looking for something to do. And I met a very engaging entrepreneur in California here named Chris Ruffer. And he was developing a concept for a new food processing company based on state-of-the-art technology. And so I joined his team and we started that company. And we were very successful financially. But also found lots of frustration in the process. And part of that stemmed from the fact that we didn't put a lot of forethought into organizational structure. And so we defaulted to the traditional management pyramid, where our founder was at the top of the pyramid. And then we had a layer of managers below him, of which I was one. So we had a financial controller, that was me, and then we had a production manager, a quality manager, a marketing manager, and a raw product acquisition manager, etc. And then we had a layer of supervisors below the managers who kind of directed activities in the factory. And then we had a layer of coordinators below the supervisors. And then at the bottom of the pyramid, we had everyone else who did the real work of the business. And it was very frustrating because no matter where an issue, a dispute, a conflict, or a problem arose anywhere in that pyramid, it always went to the top of the pyramid because we had an open door policy. So our founder was spending, you know, all of his time, it seemed like, managing conflict and resolving disputes and solving problems that other people could have solved and should have solved. So we also had a couple of epiphanies along the way. One of them was the supervisors in the group would order parts and machinery for the factory, and they would issue a purchase order. And then the machine would arrive, and we'd have a receipt. And then the vendor would send an invoice through the mail, so we had an invoice. And then an accounts payable clerk would match all those pieces of paper together and print a check. And then they would print a stack of checks and carry them down for the founder to sign. One day he was signing checks, and he came to one particular check for a machine that had been ordered by a supervisor. And he just asked the question, and it struck him. He said, "Why am I signing this check? A purchase order is a legally binding liability. It is a legal contract. If I don't sign the check, I'll be sued. And off to pay the vendor anyway." So I'm adding zero right. value to this process. So he brought the checks down to my desk and set them on my desk and said, "Why don't you sign the checks from now on? And that way I can do the things I'm supposed to be doing, things that are strategic in nature." And I said, "Great." So that was one epiphany. Another epiphany was our founder was watching people drive into the parking lot to go to work on a shift change. And most of the employees at that time were sorters. It was a tomato processing facility. They were sorting tomatoes, or they were filling containers of tomato paste at the conclusion of the process. And he realized that each one of those individuals driving into work was, in fact, a manager in his or her own personal life. So they were all making these gigantic, life-altering decisions. And they were all living family lives and civic lives and community lives and personal lives and making big decisions and managing themselves. So when they came through the gate to go to work, why should they give up their ability to self-manage as long as they know what to do and how to do it? So that was the second epiphany. So to fast forward a couple of years, our founder left to start a new company. That company was called Morningstar, and I left to join him at that company. And it was in 1990. And we were working out of a tiny farmhouse in Northern California, trying to construct a state-of-the-art tomato processing facility. It would cost $27 million in 1990 dollars, which would be double that today. And we had a core team of about 24 people. And one day, our founder came into the farmhouse and said, I'd like to call a meeting and talk about governance and how to structure the organization, have some thoughts about that. So we said, sure. So we all met with him at night in a construction trailer on the job site. We sat around in steel folding chairs in a circle, and he passed out a document called the Morningstar Colleague Principles. And basically, they boiled down to two things. One principle was that people should not use force or coercion against other people. And when you think about that principle, it's the foundation of all law everywhere in the world. Every law against assault, battery, theft, burglary, kidnapping, murder, and all the rest is founded on the principle that people shouldn't use force against others. And the second principle is people should respect and honor the commitments they make to each other. So when you think about that principle, it's also foundational to law, because contract law would be meaningless but for the fact that parties make commitments and deliver and fulfill commitments to each other. So we talked about the principles and discussed them for a couple hours. And at the end of the evening, we kind of looked at each other and said, okay, you know, we can't really argue with these. They're essentially self-evident. And so we adopted them as the governance of the enterprise. And we went out into the night air as a self-managed enterprise. And we had a lot to do. Yeah, we had a lot of work to do, so we still had to build a factory. This was March of 1990, so we had thousands of acres of tomatoes coming up out of the ground up and down the state of California. We had to hire hundreds of workers to operate the factory and drive the trucks. We had vital equipment on ocean cargo freighters out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean en route from Italy. We had hundreds of contractors on the job site, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, constructing, fabricating, welding. And finally, on July 16th of 1990, we threw the switch, and over the next 3 months, we produced 90 million pounds of industrial tomato concentrate for the world market. And we changed the cost structure of the entire industry, and we did it all without a single human boss.
Whew. Wow. That's an amazing story. And we're going to actually take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd love to ask you some follow-up questions about that. You're listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley here with my guest, Doug Kirkpatrick. We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Don't you wish you had more joy in your life? Check out the new book by Robert Max Schoenfeld, For the Love of Joy, a 30-day adventure for creating joy in your life, because you deserve more joy, more love, more health, more abundance, and more life. Available now on Amazon. Get your copy today. Visit theartofpowerfulliving.com. That's theartofpowerfulliving.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days, because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat. and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
If you have been struggling with fear and anxiety, you know how debilitating these emotions can be. You constantly doubt yourself, you can't make decisions, and feel more and more insecure and stuck. Dr. Friedman Schaub's book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, will provide you with the insights and tools to break through these challenges. Through a step-by-step process, Dr. Schaub explains how to resolve the subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety and build a strong foundation of inner peace and confidence. Visit www.thefearandanxietysolution.com and get your copy now.
Order your copy of Dr. Friedman Schaub's The Fear and Anxiety Solution today. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com for more information.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, my guest today is Doug Kirkpatrick, and we are talking about his book, Beyond Empowerment, The Age of Self-Managed Organizations. And Doug, you just told us a really compelling story about your first experience, right, with self-management and how the founder of the company you worked for, it sounds like he just came upon these ideas, didn't he, you know, as he started to think more, almost like more logically and realistically about how work works.
Yeah, I think he had the ideas already, and his insight at our first company was to figure out how to incorporate them, integrate them, apply them to a business setting. So that was kind of the insight that he had that led to the Morningstar experience.
Yeah, and two things that you shared in the Morningstar story, I'd just love to go back to for a couple minutes. About the two basic principles, you know, do not use force against another person, right? As you said, the basis of all law. And then respect and honor the commitments we make to each other. And, you know, what I love about both of those is they're just so, they're fundamental and they cover, as far as I can think right now, cover almost everything.
Right.
In terms of human behavior.
Yeah.
And so what, I mean, in your experience, have there been challenges in, and helping some people really uphold these.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the idea of these principles, obviously, they aren't new principles. We think of them, they are to human interaction what gravity is to physics. They are the most fundamental principles of human interaction. And we know this because if you imagine a world where everyone aligned their behavior with the principle of not using force, for example, we wouldn't need armies or navies or police or locks on our doors or security systems. And we know that's not reality. We understand that, but that's not the point. The point is the closer we approach that ideal, the better off we are as human beings, the more happiness, harmony, and prosperity we experience in our lives. And so the insight is, you know, how can we help people and organizations feel better and experience greater happiness and teamwork and do well and help the organization itself at the same time. If people align their behavior with a second principle of keeping commitments, what kind of a world would it be if everyone did what they said they were going to do? would be an amazing world. And again, we know that's not reality, but that's not the point. The point is, the closer we approach that ideal, the better off we are as human beings. So the insight of bringing those principles into the organization is a powerful one. And it's really what allowed Morningstar to grow from zero in 1990 to now become the largest tomato processor in the world, where everyone in North America has eaten our product because it goes into everything you can think of in the grocery store, from ketchup to salsa, pizza sauce, barbecue sauce, spaghetti sauce, and all the rest, and millions more around the world because it exports worldwide. So these principles are absolutely foundational and fundamental and lead to greatness in individuals as well as potential greatness for organizations.
Absolutely. And there's the other thing too, like, I love what you said about it's an amazing world, right? It would be an amazing world if these principles were followed uniformly, right?
Yes.
Or consistently, yeah. And so what, one question I would have, and this comes more from my vantage point of how I look at things in organizational culture and the work I do in companies, is it would seem to me that for some people to really honor, like, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm honoring the commitment, right? I'm not going to use force, even, you know, any kind of even verbal force, right, against another person.
Yeah.
Is there a certain level of emotional intelligence that's needed for this? I mean, does that sometimes get in the way?
Yeah, emotional intelligence is a real key success factor for effective self-management. To the degree people exhibit that and have that and express that, it makes things much easier in terms of working together. And you asked me a minute ago about problems, and I apologize for not addressing that directly. So there are challenges, but the challenges are really the reason for implementing self-management in the first place. The challenges have to do with human beings and our own weaknesses. Our own egos get in the way sometimes. Our lack of emotional intelligence gets in the way sometimes. There is some biology involved in this. So Dr. Keltner at UC Berkeley does research into power dynamics and how people behave in positions of power, and often it's less than optimal. Ian Robertson wrote a book called The Winner Effect, How Power Affects the Brain, and learned that tells us that when people exercise command authority over others, they get a shot of dopamine, whereby people become literally addicted to power. And so these realities of human psychology and biology have really created a lot of the reason for human systems that have checks and balances. I mean, that's why we have three branches of government and not one. Mm-hmm. We want to have checks and balances on human egos and human power trips and all the rest. And so in self-management, we recognize these human frailties, and we create systems whereby we can resolve impasses or difficulties or conflicts between individuals. Self-management itself removes all power over other people. When you say you can't use force against another person in an organization, it means that no one can tell another person what to do. I can't tell you to stop doing X and start doing Y. I don't have that authority. I can make a request for a commitment. I can ask, but you have the right to say no, or to negotiate the terms and conditions of your acceptance. So removing force is a huge check and balance on ego and power in the workplace. And that's a big part of the reason for having it in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's such a compelling and important point when we say no person can tell another person what to do, right?
Yeah.
That's really a radical mindset change for many people.
Yes.
At work, right?
Yes, yes.
That I could make a request of you, Doug, right? But I cannot, and you have the right to say no, right? And
yes.
But I cannot actually tell you to do something, right?
That's huge.
I mean, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. It flies in the face of almost all the ways that we've been, I guess, really, you know, what we've been steeped in as professional people, right?
Exactly right.
We have managers and bosses, and they tell us what to do or whatever, right? So that is, to remove all power. If you're used to being a CEO, oh, well, actually, even as a CEO, it sounds like I wouldn't have the right to say to ask you to do, to tell you to do something. I could ask and make a request, but I couldn't tell you to do it.
Exactly right. And in fact, our founder, Chris Ruper, has personally relinquished the right to fire people unilaterally. And so a corollary of this is no one has any authority to fire anyone else unilaterally. You can request that people exit the company for reasons of integrity or performance or both, but it's, again, it's a request. And you can invoke a process that will lead to a resolution, but you can't do things unilaterally using command authority.
One thing that I'm curious about, this is just occurring to me right in this moment, is so when you're, you know, working in a company like this, right, when you're an employee, or as I know you do a lot of consulting now, right, what does it feel like to be there? Like, is there kind of a palpable difference in, like, in the energy or the atmosphere and environment?
Yeah, I would say so. And what people tend to notice is the openness and transparency of the people that they talk to. So if they walk through the environment and talk to individual actors and contributors, they're very open, and they bring in their colleagues to the discussion, they're very forthright about things that they think need to change, or things that are going well, or things that need to be modified. And so the openness, the transparency, the sharing of information, the lack of guile and politicking and backstabbing and gossiping and all those things that you see in dysfunctional or disengaged workplaces. You know, people aren't perfect. They still have egos, and we never pretend like we've created some nirvana when we create a self-managed workplace. But one that's functioning well is one that's pretty open and transparent and honest.
Yeah, yeah, and I can imagine just walking through there, like you said, people notice. It just must feel easier and better and lighter to be there. Completely different than going to some organizations where you could cut the tension with a knife. At least I could, you know, when I'm going in as a consultant, you just feel it when you come in, you know, that there's so much maybe animosity or lack of trust.
Yes.
Because I don't feel safe emotionally, all of that, where it's just really the polar opposite of what you're talking about in the self-managed organization. So we are actually going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about what stops organizations from being self-managed and what we can do about it. So you are listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Winning at the game of money. Lynn Brown is now offering Full Spectrum Finance, a progressive 12-month program that will help you to navigate through the mechanics of financial expansion. Finally, a financial planner who looks at the full spectrum of money and abundance. Engage you in the mental, physical, and energetic aspects of finance. This is Full Spectrum Finance. Are you ready to get into it? For more information, go to fullspectrumfinance.com.
Tune in to the hit show, Raging Skillet Radio, Mouthing Off with Chef Rossi. Chef Rossi mouths off about different subjects in pursuit of breaking down walls and opening up your minds. She and Dr. Pat banter back and forth, taking from the headlines of the day on subjects that reach beyond what goes on in the world into your hearts. And go to theragingskillet.com to find out more and let Chef Rossi know what's on your mind.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Choose the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Best-selling author, spiritual life, and business coach Joe Nunziata brings his higher energy and no-nonsense style to people who are ready to make powerful changes now. Wake up, step up, power up with a shot of Joe. Join Joe the second and fourth Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern for 30 minutes of high energy, no-nonsense, and powerful tools to make powerful changes. Visit joenunz.com. That's joenunz.com.
Back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and my guest today is Doug Kirkpatrick, and we have been talking about his book, Beyond Empowerment, The Age of the Self-Managed Organization, for those of you just joining us. Doug, before we jump back into our conversation, if listeners wanted to find out more about your work or your book, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Right. So I would send them to our website, which is newfocusgroupusa.com, and that's spelled N-U, Focus Group USA, and that's all together, .com. That's the best place to go, and you can get the book there as well as Amazon.
Wonderful. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I'm sure there's some people listening who are thinking, oh, I should check that out. Wow, I haven't heard of self-management, but that might be something we want to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that, I'm really fortunate in the sense that, like we were talking about on break, I get to talk with so many different interesting people who are doing such great work in the world, making a lot of impact. And one of the questions I'm often curious about is, you know, why aren't more organizations, in this case, why aren't more organizations self-managed? And although we know, like you said, more people every month are hearing about it, right, and starting to understand what it is and why it's valuable, what do you think some of the obstacles are for organizations to become more self-managed?
Well, I think two big ones are, one we've already touched on. It requires people, it requires leaders to give up power.
Right.
And to organize around simple, clear principles. Gary Hamel, a very well-known management expert and author, recently reiterated those points at a conference in September in China. It's very important that leaders figure out how to relinquish authority and to organize around simple, clear principles. That's not necessarily easy, and it's partly based in biology. So We've got those challenges. The second thing I would think is just it's the inertia of tradition. So traditional management in the industrial age really became strong beginning in the 1840s and moving forward. When we started the Industrial Revolution here in the United States, we had lots of railroads and steel companies and the like, and And they relied on traditional management. And that was very hierarchical and layered and top down and command and control. And it kind of made sense for the time because the communication systems at the time were primitive compared to today. So we were moving information around on scraps of paper or via Morse code at one character at a time. Railroads needed a manager for every 100 miles of railroad track just to make sure the trains didn't collide with each other. Mm-hmm. And based on some recent episodes, maybe we need to revert back to that in some cases.
I was going to say, yeah.
But it was a different world. And in today's world, information moves on rivers at light speed. And when people have access to information that's actionable, that they can use for decision making and management, why shouldn't they be able to do so? We are in a different world. And so the world today is one that calls out for less hierarchy, less bureaucracy, for people being able to make decisions and act on information that's at their fingertips already. So the need for these bureaucratic systems is fast fading. And it's not just the internet and communication technologies. It's a lot of powerful technologies that are all converging at the same time. When you think of things like blockchain technology and nanotechnology and virtual reality and robotics and artificial intelligence and all the rest, and how these things are all starting to work together along with information movement. It's an incredibly disruptive and powerful time, and the catalysts for change are very strong, but we still have this, you know, kind of human biological ego-driven desire for power, and that is a big roadblock to moving towards self-managed enterprises.
And this power, I was curious, in your role as a consultant, have you seen cases where a leader who was, a very powerful, I'm making this up, but a very powerful leader, right, who decided to really saw the wisdom, right, and the efficiency in self-managed organizations, you know, someone who was able to say, I'm going to shift how I am in terms of power for the good of the organization. Have you seen people who are able to make that transition?
Yes, and I point to a very powerful example in China, where the Haier Group is the world's largest appliance manufacturer. A few years ago, they had 80,000 employees globally.
Wow.
They shed about 10,000 middle managers and got down to 70,000. And they created almost 4,000 self-managed teams out of their entire global workforce. And it's all really the brainchild of their very visionary CEO, Zhang Rimin, who founded the company in 1986. It was a failing enterprise, making poor quality refrigerators. And Zhang Rimin smashed the refrigerators in his inventory, 76 refrigerators, with a sledgehammer, and said, we're not going to make bad quality product anymore. We're going to be a different company. And he embarked on a decades-long pursuit of excellence. And where he ended up is that in 2012, he formed this concept called Rend and Hay, which is about having zero distance to customers through information technology, the internet. The Internet of Things is how he describes the current age. And he wanted everyone in his company to be able to be an innovator and an entrepreneur. So in these self-managed teams, if someone spots an opportunity for a new product or service, they're able to apply for funding. And if they create a successful product or service, there's a possibility of securing outside venture capital and spinning off an entirely new company. It's it's a platform for massive innovation and entrepreneurship, unlike anything the world's ever seen. And so it's just a matter of, it's a result, really, of Zhang Rumin and his extremely deep, broad understanding and reading and depth and thought and really coming up with this idea that the future is self-managed. And we better be there, and we better be in the forefront of things. And the recent purchase of GE Appliances in Louisville, Kentucky is a testament to their success and to their growth and to the thoughtfulness to which they've applied all these ideas of entrepreneurship and innovation. It's a very powerful example of success.
Sounds like it, yeah. And they have, what, 80, you said 80,000 people?
Now they have about 70,000. Okay, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But have this this image I was having of all these, 70, 80,000 people all making their own decisions, right? Doing the planning, managing whatever role they need to do, right? Being able to be innovative, being able to, right? And what would happen, which is what did happen, right? This sounds like incredible success.
Yeah, it's quite amazing.
I would imagine, almost all these employees feeling incredibly, somewhere beyond empowered, right? They're really self-managed. And within that, we haven't touched on this, but within that, it would seem to me that an extension of the self-management following the two key principles is that people just like their jobs better.
Well,
one
would think. Of course, that's the decision of each and every individual. So we kind of start with the idea of free will. And people are going to be as motivated or as happy or as engaged as they choose to be. And it's really up to the individual. But it is a paradigm shift in that it's no one else's job to make sure that you're motivated in the workplace. That's your job and yours alone. And so when you start with the idea of free will and you recognize that, then it's actually quite liberating for traditional managers, because now they're not responsible for the attitudes and the moods and the motivations of individual contributors who are quote unquote under their control and direction. Everyone is responsible for himself or herself, and that's a paradigm shift.
That is a huge paradigm shift, because they're hot topics, right? Still in management, that I talk with people about and read about are, how can I motivate my employees more effectively? And you're saying, well, you can't, because they can only motivate themselves.
Yeah. Well, let's unpack that statement, Claudette, that you just made. How can I motivate my employees more effectively? I would argue, first of all, they're not your employees. Every person is an individual contributor, and they're choosing whether to be there on a given day or not. Secondly, I would argue that part of change has to do with language and culture. And if you look at the word employee, we never use the word employee at Morningstar, and I definitely eschew that, the use of that term with my clients, because the word employee literally means someone who works for another person for pay. And if you talk to any millennial anywhere in the world, they don't want to work for other people. They want to work for purpose and meaning. And most of them aren't working just for pay. They're working for purpose and meaning. So the idea of using the word employee and the idea of people being my employees or her employees or your employees, those uses of language are very passe and very reflective of the old command and control industrial age lexicon that we're trying to transcend at this point in time.
That's a really interesting point, and I want to come back to that in just a minute after we take a break. So you're listening to Cultural Brilliance. I'm Claudette Rowley, and when we come back, we're gonna dive right back into where we left off here about the power of language and how it indicates what we're thinking about. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
Are you ready to stop stress, anxiety, and low self-esteem from running your life? Join award-winning author Dr. Friedemann Schaub for Empowerment Radio and learn breakthrough solutions to switch out of survival mode and approach every day with great ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in the first and third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to Empowerment Radio with host Dr. Friedemann Schaub on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com to learn more.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
The Janice Underwood Show, helping you create the life you want, not the life you tolerate. Tune in each Monday, 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as Janice delves into the life creator system and the next step in your spiritual evolution. Janice Underwood is gifted at helping spiritually minded people shift their mindsets to unleash the creator within. Our souls wish to wake us up. Those of us listening hear the call. Do you? For more information, visit JaniceUnderwood.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, here with my guest today, Doug Kirkpatrick, and we have been talking about self-managed organizations. And right before the break, Doug, we started to really talk about the power of language, right? How we use language, especially around work, often is helps us understand, reveals, I guess is a better way of saying it, the paradigm, right? So I was saying something about your employee, you know, someone's talking about their employees, and you said, well, employees are not anybody's, right?
Right.
Employees are people who literally work for pay, and both of those are part of this older command and control way of thinking about work.
Yes.
And I know you've done quite a bit of work on the power of language and really kind of dissecting and thinking this through, so what are some words that help us shift into a different and better paradigm? What are some other words we can use?
Well, human beings, people.
Always good.
those are the words that I would shift to, because the other language that's grown up around humans at work is very dehumanizing. So We even look at the use of possessive pronouns. So leaders will talk about our people, my people, your people, his people, her people, your people, their people, its people. I think we should reserve possessive pronouns for things that can actually be possessed and not for human beings. The term human resources itself, Henry Mintzberg, a great management thinker, his battle cry is, I'm not a human resource, I'm a human being. And, you know, it's an expression that most people resonate with. You know, I talked about the word employee already. We hear words like direct reports. Well, really, people are reports. They're not people. We talk about headcount as if people don't have bodies. They just have heads. You know, there are so many words and phrases that are just absolutely dehumanizing. And so I've kind of made it a personal mission to root those out wherever I can.
Yeah, yeah. I was sharing one of my favorites, is human capital, right? You know, human capital. What is that? Right.
Exactly.
Human beings.
Exactly. I'll add that to my
definitely
list.
Human beings. Yeah, human capital, yeah. Yeah, and it is dehumanizing. It's a way of distancing, right, from the fact that we are interacting and impacting the lives of human beings.
Exactly.
At work, yeah. And so people who are listening today who either knew about self-management or didn't, but in any case are intrigued, want to know more, even thinking, you know, wow, what if we brought some of this into our organization, right? What are some, like, best first steps or strategies you would recommend?
Well, I would experiment. I would not try to convert an entire company without doing my homework and understanding exactly why I'm doing it and how I'm going to be doing it and what my expectations are for doing it. But it's easy to run experiments. And so my friend Alexis Gonzalez Black wrote an article in the Huffington Post called Try a Decision-Making Process That Makes You Smarter. And it's all about running experiments and trying things in ways that don't sink the ship or stick you with unnecessary, unacceptable risk. So is there a department or a team or a work group where you can try to implement some of the artifacts and tools and systems and processes of self-management? One of the main tools of self-management is what we call a colleague letter of understanding or a peer agreement, where people actually create contracts with each other, interlocking contracts between peers, and they identify the why, what is their personal mission in the enterprise or the work group or the team, what are the processes for which they agree to be personally accountable, what's the scope and quantum of their individual decision-making authority for the processes, how do they measure whether they're doing a good job, who are they going to connect with and as accountability partners in this work group or team or network or department? There are lots of ways to experiment with what it feels like to be a self-managed team inside an organization. And it doesn't put the entire organization through another transformation project or another change project. So, small experiments, try things. If they're safe enough to try, give it a shot. Measure the results. Find out how it worked, what's working well, what's not working well. Reconfigure the experiment. Just try some things and see how they work.
Yeah, they'll try. You know, try it out, prototype it, right? See what happens.
Exactly.
What do you learn?
Exactly.
Move forward. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. And then, so that's one thing. And then it sounds like for this to be successful, based on what you've said today, at least, that leaders really need to be behind it, right? They need to be leading the charge and on board with these ideas.
Well, I would say
to experiment with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say to try things without having a buy-in or the backing of people who have authority to quash or stop mm-hmm. your experiment would probably be a bit daunting. It would be better mm-hmm. to have the support, tacit, explicit, or implicit support of mm-hmm. people who have power to stop or start or affect your experiment. So I think that's important to help them tie in to your experiment as a stakeholder and keep them up to date. And that's part of building trust and respect with the larger organization.
And what's your, as we're coming to a close here, you know, and even just a sentence or two, you know, what is your vision for what the world could be like if our organizations were self-managed?
Yeah, so I see my vision is a world where people are doing fulfilling work that makes them feel good about themselves, that is contributing value to society, to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So that's my vision. Great. If everyone in the world could be doing that, it would be an amazing world.
I wholeheartedly agree. It absolutely would. So, Doug, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing your knowledge and expertise with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Claudette, very much.
Yeah, and it was really interesting, and I think a lot of what you shared was it falls in that category for me of seemingly simple yet incredibly profound and impactful. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning into Cultural Brilliance Radio. I had a wonderful time as always. Please join me the second and fourth Fridays of the month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Have a great week, and I'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.